intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Never in the history of this program have we done a show, a science show, on a military general, never on a president of the United States, on our science shows, and never on World War II until Dr. Jerry Bergman came to town. It's time to talk about Eisenhower. The book is God in Eisenhower's Life. Hot off the presses, Dr. Jerry Bergman, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
It's great to be here and talk about a topic I really love.
When you speak at a creation event and people come to the back book table and they see a book on Eisenhower.
I've sold out every time.
So why would it be that a famous creation scientist, the most prolific in the whole creation movement, why would it be with all your PhDs in molecular biology and medicine and anatomy topics, why would you write a book about General Eisenhower?
Well, a lot of reasons. I'm indirectly related to him, one reason. And my mother was from Kansas, where he was from, and just always perked up when that subject came about. And as I read more and more about him, I realized that World War II had a lot to do with him as the Supreme Allied Commander. And why did he fight the war? His mother was a pacifist. In fact, when he went to West Point, his mother went home and cried. She could not understand why her son would be involved in a war.
Wow.
And actually, Eisenhower himself was a pacifist, but he stated, I hate war, but I hate Nazism even more. Why did he hate Nazism? Because the central goal of Nazism is the idea of race. There were superior races and inferior races. And the superior race was the Aryan race, whatever that is. And the inferior race was, well, just about everybody else, including the Slavics, the Jews, Gypsies, and on down the line.
Blacks.
And
Hispanics.
Hispanics. And even though he was an ally to some degree with Japan, and the Japanese were, he thought, an inferior race, but we'll get them later. We'll try to get Europe first, and then we'll spread throughout the world and we'll eliminate the other inferior races. And so racism was basically the core of Nazism, the core of the war. Not just World War II, by the way, but also World War I. And essentially, the best summary of the book is this war was a war between creation and evolution lost and creation won.
World War II is the war between creation and evolution.
Right.
And creation won.
Right.
You're going to have to unwrap that for us. Jerry, I notice when atheists, when they mention some event happens where some professor doubts evolution and they go apoplectic, they go nuts and they say, this will destroy America. Or there's some teacher who believes that God created us. It will destroy America. But America has been the scientific and technological powerhouse of the world. And by far, we have the highest percentage of educated creationists in the whole world.
Right.
The more creationists we had, the stronger our science and technology was. So tell me, though, how does that factor in? You've already said that the Nazis were basically, they were racist.
Right. And they based their racism, of course, on evolution. And they made that very clear, that indeed, for evolution to work, there has to be racial differences. And the superior race would survive because of natural selection. And the inferior race would be wiped out because of natural selection. So they made it very clear where they were going because they thought, indeed, certain races were inferior. And this was affecting Germany and the world adversely.
So survival of the fittest, the strong can kill the weak and use their resources. Now, I said you're the most prolific creation author. I hope you don't mind me bring that up when I see you and interview you. But have you ever written a book on Nazism and the motivations of the leading Nazis?
Oh, yeah. I've written several books on that area.
When, in fact, there was a scandal regarding you at a college campus, and they claimed that your views were in support of National Socialism. And I was thinking, Jerry has written the most brilliant book against the Nazis. These liberal critics are so ignorant.
Yeah, they come up with a conclusion, as we see today in politics, and like so many people are so thoroughly confused that indeed Trump is basically in cahoots with Russia, and they're working together.
Right.
And he's a spy for Russia. Yeah,
he's a Russian agent.
And his interests are Russia's interests first, not our interests.
And he's done more to oppose Russia's self-interest than any recent president. And we have Obama whispering on a live microphone, don't worry, I'll help you Russians as soon as I win re-election.
Yeah.
And Hillary gives them what percentage of our uranium resources in the U.S.? So it couldn't be more opposite of reality, the liberal worldview.
Very true. And if my critics would have read my book, they would realize that this is a foolish statement to make. But
yeah.
On the other hand, now going back to Eisenhower, what did he believe? Now, I don't know if he ever used the word creationism or even the word creation, but he basically made it very clear that all humans are descendants of Adam and Eve. Therefore, we all are given an inalienable right to certain things. And these things include we are all, from God's standpoint, we are all equal.
Hmm.
And he stressed over and over that his worldview was, in essence, there are no inferior races. Evolution does not work. It cannot work. In fact, he criticized evolution in some of his writings. Now, he wasn't a scientist, so he's not going to spend a lot of time on this.
Right.
But he made it very clear over and over where he stood, and that in order for a civilization to thrive and be what he thinks it should be, which is basically racial equality, you must destroy the organizations which oppose this, and that was Nazism. And that's why he said, I'm a pacifist. I hate war as no one can hate war. And indeed, he says, one like me who has seen the evils of war is going to hate it because of his experiences, not because indeed he's read some philosophical treatise, a book about this problem.
So Eisenhower's belief that there's only one human race,
right,
with variation, and that we all descended, as the book of Acts says, the New Testament says that God made us from one blood.
Right.
Jesus said that God made Adam and Eve.
Right.
We're all descended. In fact, it was Adam's sin that brought disease, suffering, death onto the whole human race.
Right.
Because we're all descended from the first parents whom God made. And then the fact that Eisenhower affirmed this, it's almost as though it has been eradicated from our corporate knowledge and memory of his life.
Right. And Eisenhower himself realized that. He said, in the future, people will deny the Holocaust. And that was his main concern, was the Holocaust and how the Germans were treating poorly these different racial groups. And basically, he said, it will be denied in the future. So he wanted his staff to document very carefully with hours and hours of film footage, with photographs, with interviews. And so there are whole buildings now that have the information that he gathered as a result of the Holocaust. He wanted, we shall not forget this ever. We need to repeat this.
Yeah.
And not repeat this. And therefore, to ensure that happens, we need to document indeed that this did happen.
Yeah, when we've taken our Bible tours of Israel, Greece, Turkey, Italy, we've gone a few times to Israel and always to Yad Vashem, their Holocaust Museum. The one in Washington, D.C. is also extraordinary.
Yeah.
But in the face of all that, and in the face of the world population of Jews being decreased over a short period of time by 6 million human beings, you still do have racists who will deny, like we just saw from, in fact, on Al Jazeera, just recently in a video they put on the internet, got over 100,000 views in a short amount of time, denying, minimizing the Holocaust.
Yeah, that's, of course, an effort to reduce the effects of it by trying to minimize it. And therefore, it's not important, and this is not really a concern that we need to worry about. Mm-hmm. By the way, in publishing my book, I mentioned earlier that normally I try one publisher, the second publisher. Occasionally, I have to try a third publisher. This book, I must have at least contacted 20 publishers.
Oh.
And they all said, nope, we're not interested.
Wow.
In fact, earlier, I got discouraged, and my manuscript got out, and it got out to Andrew Goodpaster, who took over Eisenhower's role and became the Supreme Allied Commander in after World War II. And he got a hold of it, and he called me up at the college, and he said, you are right on. This is very accurate. It's very true.
Wow.
You must publish this. In fact, I dedicated the book to him, and he wrote the preface for me. And so someone who is this eminent, he was a Princeton graduate. He got his bachelor's and PhD from Princeton. He had very important roles in the United States as well as in the after the theater in World War II in Europe. And so he said, you must publish this. This is right on. This is exactly what happened. So there's a lot of resistance against this idea. And I mentioned earlier that I sent it to Michigan State University. And they said, yeah, we really like this. It's well done. We'll publish it. And they started the progress of publishing it. Well, they sent it out to one more reviewer. And he basically went through it carefully, took a month, made a lot of notes and said, yep, you're right. This is true. It's well supported, but it's not for us.
Hmm.
And so to me, that's pretty obvious. A university press, they're not concerned about, or they're concerned about opposing religion instead of supporting the theological worldview. And so as a result, I just moved on. And finally, I did find a publisher, which is very supportive.
Hmm. I'm so thankful that you did. So perhaps we could get into the details. When you said that the National Socialist, and that's Nazi is an abbreviation
right.
for National Socialist. A lot of young people don't know that.
Yeah.
But the Nazis were socialist. And when you wrote in your book on what motivated the National Socialist, that it was Darwinism, and you quoted leaders in the Nazi Party, you quoted right. the leaders indicating their own commitment to implement Charles Darwin's ideas. Well, the left went nuts over this. And to them, you can't quote Nazis who were explaining their motives. That's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Only the left can invent motives for the Nazis.
Yeah.
But when the Nazis themselves tell you exactly what they're doing and why, that's not valid.
Right. Well, that's yeah. what's claimed, right. And so, yeah, the National Socialist Workers' Party made it very clear what their goals were, even though they disliked socialists. But on the other hand, they, of course, were in many ways were socialists. And it's pretty obvious from the programs. By the way, that's why Hitler had so much support from the German people, was because Hitler brought about many innovations, which we today have copied. The interstate highways, one example, Autobahn. And Volkswagen, another example, a car for everybody that everybody could afford, another example. Social Security is another example where he pioneered. And,
which we oppose on this show anyway, but go ahead.
But yeah, many of these programs that we have adopted began, at least in some form, in Nazi Germany first. So he had so many people behind him because they got a lot of benefits. You know, government gives me lots of things, I'm going to support the government.
Right.
And so therefore he
bought Venezuela.
He bought their love, basically, is what he did. And as a result, he ended up with enormous support at first. But then when they realized what was happening, his support withdrew. I can mention, too, that it's ironic that he would march into a country like Austria and Ukraine and so on, Latvia, and he would have a hero's welcome. Thousands of people came out and cheered him and put flowers in the guns of the soldiers. And they thought at first that it's better to be ruled by Germany than Russia. And this is why the Ukrainians, for example, were very much in favor of the new government, the Nazi government, because they thought it would be better. Well, it didn't take long, and they turned around and they started to kill the Jews and other people based on racial differences. And this turned the people against, of course, Nazi Germany. But this fairly quickly happened. Mm. But indeed, when it happened, of course, the Soviets exploited that and said, are you better off under the Germans? No, you're not. This is what you're doing to the Ukrainian people in this case. But so if he didn't have the racist motivation, and when you took over countries like Rome, when they took over a country, they're part of your country now. You make them, and at first they were. And in fact, something like 30 divisions of German armies were made up of non-Germans because they were so supportive of what Germany was doing until they started to kill the Jews and other groups. And then when they started to do that, people turned against them. And it's felt by many scholars that probably if they didn't turn against the Jews and other Romani and Slavics and so on, they probably would have won the war. So this was a major reason they lost the war, was because, again, the racism. And this was a major reason that Eisenhower brought out. Now, it's true he was the supreme commander of the Allied forces. But on the other hand, he had a role not only as a general, but he had a very personal concern about where the Nazis were going.
Mm.
And therefore, a lot of people felt, well, surrender, have them surrender. And Eisenhower said, no, we want to defeat them. We want them to be defeated because we want to stop the racism, et cetera, the policies that they developed. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that was one reason why, indeed, they were defeated, even though several people said, just let them surrender. Nope, he did not want them to surrender. He wanted unconditional surrendering, not a some type of agreement between the two countries.
Eugenics was birthed from Charles Darwin's theory by one of his nephews, Galton, if I recall.
Right, Galton.
And picked up in the U.S., Margaret Sanger, she had her birth control review. Eventually, they named the group Planned Parenthood.
Right.
But they were promoting eugenics aggressively. It's really awesome that Dwight Eisenhower held the views that he did because they were so contrary to the academics of his day. But then the Germans and the Nazis, as you cover in your book, they took a lot of the justification for their ideas from America.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And they quoted Sanger and they quoted U.S. Supreme Court decisions, which basically legalized throughout the United States the practice of eugenic sterilization. Mm. So they relied heavily upon, in fact, one of my books I'm working on now, basically I show that Nazi ideology came from America, and they acknowledged it came from America.
Yeah.
A good example is Henry Ford, who was wrote all these books, The International Jew, and he was very aggressive against Jews because he concluded they were inferior. They were an inferior race, and they were doing harm in America. And it's ironic, one story which I love to tell, people don't have to think about it before they understand, but one of Ford's closest friends was a neighbor, actually, was a rabbi. And he used to give this rabbi a new Ford every year. And when his rabbi friend found out about his aggressive anti-Jewish work, he basically gave him the car, and his friend, the rabbi, rejected it.
Wow, so refused the gift.
And so Ford basically called him up and said, we've been friends for many years. Why did something come between us?
Yeah, right.
And he really wasn't aware of the idea that his friend, who he knew was a rabbi, obviously, but he wasn't aware of the fact that when he was condemning Jews, he was condemning some of his friends. In fact, he's well known for treating his Jewish employees quite well in the Ford plants. So he didn't separate this idea of Jews from the reality.
People he actually interacted with.
Yeah.
You recall, of course, the monkey trial, the Scopes trial in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And it was the trial of the century. And it was over this textbook called Hunter's Civic Biology.
Right.
And in that text, they indicated that blacks and Jews were closer to apes than were white Europeans.
Yeah.
And that's the book that the ACLU fought to be used and taught in the public schools. And the Christians at the time, who were also creationists in the extent that they believed that God created us male and female, Adam and Eve, the creationists were strongly opposed to this objectification of human beings that were just animals.
Right. And that was a major motivation that Brian had. Brian, of course, was called the Great Commoner. He was very involved in various activities, and one of his major concerns was the poor, those who didn't have the same rights that we do. And one reason he got involved in the trial was, of course, the law basically—
William Jennings Bryan.
Well, the law basically prohibited human evolution, not evolution. They could teach evolution, but the concern was human evolution. And William Jennings Bryan made it very clear his concern was, again, equality of the races, and he felt it was wrong to teach evolution because he knew that would lead to racism, which it did. Hmm. And therefore, a major reason he had for opposing the law was it would dehumanize humans, some humans, and therefore he was concerned about its effect on people, which he observed back in his day, but indeed it did have a very negative effect on many people, especially the poor, certain Southern people, and Negroes, and other disenfranchised minorities.
So when the ACLU went in there and supported this book, Hunter's Biology, then John Scopes, he was used as a pawn, really.
Right.
And after the trial, they raised money to send him, I think it was to Chicago, to get his degree.
University of Chicago, to get his doctorate.
Yeah, and what a wonderful quote he stated. There's a film called Alleged, made Alleged. About 5 years ago right. on the Monkey Trial. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, what a great film. A lot of big name actors, actresses, written by a longtime friend of Real Science Radio, Fred Foote. Well, the quote at the end of the film comes from John Scopes, and he said, "There is more intolerance in the halls of academia than there is in all the hills of Tennessee."
Yeah.
What a beautiful quote, and so completely true.
And that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
It's surprising the ACLU would support the racist side, but they did. They were seemed to be focused on the whole evolution issue and ignored the implications of evolution, what it actually taught.
Yeah, because it was just another expression in their long war against God.
Yeah.
They hated God, so here's a great opportunity.
Right.
The book is God in Eisenhower's Life, Military Career, and Presidency, and this is a history of the influence of religion in his life and leadership as World War II Supreme Allied Commander and President of the United States. So his opposition to the Nazis and his opposition to racism.
Right. That stems from his early upbringing. He was raised by a devoutly religious mother. They got involved in a movement called the Bible Students, and they had Bible studies in their home for his whole growing up time period, or pretty much his whole growing up time period in Abilene, Kansas. And the Bible studies consisted of each child would read a portion of the Bible. And when he made a mistake, they had to stop. Hmm. And then another child would take over. And so he memorized Bible verses. He was very involved in the Bible study and activities. And he very admired his mother. This is very clear throughout his entire life. Uh-huh. There was no one better in his life than his mother. And his mother was very, very devout Christian, who was very concerned about Christian values. And as a result, he accepted these values. And he was very concerned about pleasing his mother, and therefore very concerned about the implications of Nazism and especially racism, lack of equality. And he, in his upbringing, he was also involved in the Brethren, Church of Brethren, and Mennonites, and other denominations that are very concerned about poor treatment of various groups, minority groups especially. And so this is part of his upbringing.
So with the way that he honored his mother, I think of a couple modern proverbs, the hands that rock the cradle rule the world, and how true in his case.
And he strongly felt that he did as well as he did in fighting the war because God was on his side. And when people would ask him, why did you do so well in proceeding the war? And he said, I prayed a lot, and I strongly believe that God was on our side. And it's hard, you know, in a war, it's hard to say, well, God's on your side, not on my side, or vice versa. But on the other hand, the concern he looked at was the Nazis' repression of religion and of values that he thought were very important. So it wasn't so much against the Germans or the Nazis. You know, he was German. His father was fluent in German. His father would read many books in German. So his father, Eisenhower, is a German name. And so therefore, it wasn't against Germans. It was specifically against the values that in Nazi Germany they held, which were very strongly opposed to his values. And when he became president, there's no president that I know of that has done so much to facilitate the spread of Christianity and religious values than Eisenhower. I have chapters on this, the prayer breakfast that he was very supportive, In God We Trust on the coins, etc. He changed this or added to the, I forget exactly what he did on God We Trust, but he did more than most presidents to support Christianity. In fact, today a lot of his things would be scandalous because of what he openly did to support Christianity. He had a pastor in the White House which basically proofread his speeches to make sure they didn't quote his scripture correctly, etc.
Wow. After the victory in the Pacific, there was a public call for missionaries to go to Japan. And it's sad that more people didn't respond to that call. But like you said, with today's political correctness, that would be unthinkable. But really, that is a major part of national security, is when the gospel is preached.
Right.
And when people humble themselves before Jesus Christ and they take his teaching, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. That's national security.
Yeah, right. And Eisenhower recognized that. And he was very concerned about the reduction of religious activities in the United States. And he was trying to work against that and trying to say religion is very important. Our relationship with God is very important in our country. And therefore, we need to do what we can in order to facilitate and encourage the adoption of Christian values in America. And he did his entire presidency. He was very supportive of these values. Of course, as you know, he was very close to Billy Graham, and Billy Graham was very influential in the Eisenhower presidency, as were other presidents, but this began largely with his relationship with Dwight Eisenhower. His middle name, Dwight, of course, came from Dwight Moody, and so this is an indication of the religious background in his family.
Wow. He was, we think about two-star generals, three-star, four-star. He was a five-star general.
Five-star, right. And we weren't doing too well in the war until Eisenhower came along. And now he had some failures in the first part of the war, but indeed, once he became involved and became aware of what was at stake, then he put himself wholly into it, so to speak. And he strongly relied upon prayer to do what he did, and he felt he was successful in what he did because of his heavily reliance upon prayer. He did feel that God was on not America's side so much, but was on the side of the right. And this case, he felt America was clearly in the right and Germany was in the wrong.
Jerry, could you repeat that summary of the book? And then I have a question about it for you.
Okay, the summary basically is World War II was a war between creation and evolution, and creation won.
Wow. So in Germany, when the National Socialists took over, I don't think we could argue that of all the nations in Europe, the Germans were the least educated. I don't think we could say that. No, they had the least science. They had the least arts.
They were by far the most educated.
The most educated and the most science and the highest achievement of the arts. And what that shows to me is that morality, right and wrong, doesn't come from the laws of science.
Right.
The laws of science cannot tell you that it's wrong to abort an unborn child.
Right.
And God can tell you that.
And we know where Hitler got his ideas from. He didn't make up these ideas. He read heavily the writings by scientists and by science writers in Germany. In fact, we know this because we have many of his books that he read from. And so we know where he got his ideas and some of his expressions from. They were indeed from the scientific establishment in Germany at that time.
Mm. He got some ideas, it seems to me, going back and reading parts of Plato's Republic. Some of his ideas seem to come right from Plato. But then also the socialist component of that worldview, when Hillary Clinton published her book, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child, neat African proverb. Mm-hmm. Problem is, liberals don't live by that. They let the internet be flooded with pornography, for example. But we took the dust cover from Hillary's book and put it on a copy of Mein Kampf.
Oh.
And I went on TV, Bob and Your Live, we've been on the air 28 years, 5 days a week. For about 5 years, we were simulcast TV and radio. Mm-hmm. And I pretended I was reading quotes from Hillary's book, but they came straight from Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
And Hitler was talking about, well, really things that would fit perfectly in the Democratic Party platform. Perfectly.
Yeah.
You didn't have to misquote them. Take it out of context. And I said, you know, it had to be an evil mind to write these things. And so liberals were calling in and defending it.
Yeah.
And then we took the dust cover off and the camera zoomed in and it was Adolf Hitler, Mein Kampf.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, Hitler was a voracious reader. He read. His library was huge. We have a lot of it, but unfortunately, we weren't able to save all of it. But indeed, he read and underlined and made notes. And so he was a voracious reader. Mm. So we know, as I said, where he got these ideas from.
Yeah. Yeah. And science cannot tell you right from wrong. The Creator tells us right from wrong.
Right.
And he gave us a conscience and revealed his word to us.
That's
in the
true.
Bible. So, Jerry, it's an honor again to have you in studio. And this book, very different from any of the others I've interviewed you on, God in Eisenhower's Life, Military Career, and Presidency. Thank you for this.
And it's on Amazon now, so you can order it.
Amazon.com. And we will link to it from rsr.org, but also from rsr.org/Bergman. And if you're driving and you want to remember rsr.org/Eisenhower, That'll get you the book, too.
Right.
This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.